Thank you very much, Kim Gordon. Steve Bertrand here. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch. It is 9 minutes after 12 o'clock here on 720 WGN. Terry Savage is on a phone line, the personal finance expert. You can read her at terrysavage.com, the Huffington Post, and Tribune, and just about everywhere, right, Terry? Is there anyone you don't write for?
I'm trying to be everywhere because I have so many people to talk to about so much stuff.
I want to talk about...
But I'm not slapping. By the way, I just want you to know, I'm not slapping anyone anywhere except maybe in the wallet.
You're not going to slap Wendy Snyder for taking a loan out of her 401k?
Wendy and I are buddies, and she knows what I like to say, which is pay down debt. By the way, I want to tell you a quick story. This happened this morning.
Okay.
Actually, last week I was taking a cab in from O'Hare. I hope he's listening. Maybe he has it on. And a wonderful cab driver named Dominic who recognized me, and we started talking money. He gave me permission to tell the story, and I'm going to write a column about it.
You're not supposed to talk money with strangers, Terry.
I do. I talk money with everyone. That's
okay,
why
that's
I'm
true,
here with you.
Right.
So Dominic confessed to me, he told me I could give the number. He has $12,000 worth of credit card debt. He's 70 years old, and he's just buried in debt. He can't ever get ahead. And I start giving him my usual advice. He says, I can't do that. So I gave him, and I'm going to give you all a toll-free number, and it's always prominently posted at terrysavage.com, the toll-free number of Consumer Credit Counseling, the nonprofit you can trust. It is 800-388-2227, and I'll repeat that later. Anyway, I got a call from Dominic this morning. He went in to see them. They reduced they got his interest rate reduced on his credit card. He had to give up the card. But he says, but he's going to live without it. They actually lowered his monthly payment from $308 to $303. But instead of having to pay for the next 25 years, he will have his credit card paid off, they showed him, in less than 4 years.
Oh, good for you.
And then he'll have all that extra money afterward. So congratulations, Dominic, and to anybody else. I know it's supposedly better times these days, but if you have credit card debt, 800-388-2227 connects you to the nearest local office of the National Foundation for Credit Counseling. Congratulations to Dominic. I told him he's got to keep calling me every year and letting me know he's sticking to the plan.
You've only got 4 calls left, and then he'll be golden.
He'll be golden.
All right, so I want to talk 401k, but before I do, I was reading a story this morning that didn't square with me, or I didn't quite understand it, and I know that you can help me explain it. Michael Farrow, who is now the non-executive publisher of the Tribune, right? So he's leaving. They announced today a shakeup, and Bruce Dold is the publisher and editor now of the Tribune, which is great. But Farrow is leaving he came from the Sun-Times, where his company owned a controlling interest. He is now essentially the chairman at the Tribune. So he's divesting from the Sun-Times. Now, what they said was he is putting his money in a charitable trust or will benefit charitable causes, the assets he had at the Sun-Times. So I'm not sure I understand. What does that mean when it comes to voting at the Sun-Times or control of the company, or how does that work?
Oh, Steve, you know you could get me in a lot of trouble. Don't
I know. I wonder. I don't want to get you in trouble.
25 years.
I know. I know.
The second worst thing in Chicago to commenting on the mayor is commenting on the management at the Sun-Times.
Yeah,
it really means is that he gets to write off, and some accountants will determine how much, and he will get a huge tax benefit from his, quote, charitable gift, which is defined as a win-win-win for Michael Farrell and poor Sun-Times.
Okay.
That's all I'll say about it. I don't know what the terms of the trust he set
up. Yeah, you know what?
In order for him to get the stock to be out of his hands completely, he won't. In general, if you do this kind of thing.
You know what? And
I make an irrevocable trust and not have any control over it. So I don't know the terms, but it's all of that is pretty sad for Chicago.
Yeah, I didn't mean to get you into that. I'm interested in the governance of the Sun-Times then, when your biggest shareholder sort of...
It depends on who's the trustee.
Oh, okay. So the trustee might still be involved in the company.
Oh, the charitable trust has got the stock and the voting rights, however that company is organized and manages it sometimes, and I don't know, honestly. But sure, there will have to be a trustee of this trust whose goal is to maximize for the beneficiaries of the charities what they can get, and also to, I suppose, keep the business providing money. So
okay, that's exactly what I was after. That's what I that's what didn't add up to me. Okay, thank you for that. All right, let's go to our 401k because, you know, I remember, you know, 15, 20 years ago, someone said, hey, the great thing about a 401k is if you ever need the money, you can just loan it to yourself and then you pay it back. It's all yours all the time. And it seemed pretty clear that that was a bad idea.
A lot of hazards. My new column up at terrysavage.com because although plan borrowing has gone down in the last couple of years as the economy has picked up and more people have jobs, there's still that temptation. And the temptation month is now because you're now the second month of bills left over from Christmas balances that you couldn't pay off in full.
Yeah, you got guys and like Dominic driving around, right?
Exactly. But I mean, the people that charged more suddenly realized, oh, I couldn't pay it off in January. Ooh, at the end of February, it's March now. Where do I get the money? Let me get rid of this 29% credit card charge. It's understandable that you would want to tap into your 401k. And so that's why I wrote this column. If nearly 15% of participants in 401k plans have a loan, and they tend to keep that loan outstanding for 5 years. It's a lower rate, of course, but all the growth your money could have had if it were still in your diversified investment program in the plan is lost, and all the future growth on that growth. And, you know, we talk about the stock market over the long run, keep putting that $300 a month in, even in the tough times. Well, you are really shooting yourself in the foot, number one, by taking the money out because you may pay interest to yourself, but you're not getting investment returns.
Right, so what if you need $20,000? I mean, are you better off going and getting a loan from a bank with that $20,000 or losing that growth?
You know, the long-term implications of a 401k plan are huge. Now, home equity loans today are probably as low an interest rate as the 401k plan loan, and you get to deduct the interest. I worry about those because those are mostly interest-only loans and they're subject to rate increases if rates rise. But at the moment, for sure, a home equity loan is a better choice, even though you pay about 4% probably on average in your 401k loan. But the other thing is people don't understand about the repayment rules.
Right.
If you're fired, you lose your job, or if you just want to take another job while the loan is outstanding, you have to repay that money within 60 days of losing your job, or it's considered a withdrawal or a default on the loan, and then you have to pay back. You have to 10% federal tax penalty if you're under 59.5, and ordinary income taxes on the money you withdrew.
Yeah, so it can be very dangerous.
They collect $1 billion every year in 401k plan withdrawal penalties.
That's one thing I didn't realize until I read your column. And being fired is one thing, but even if you leave your job for a better job, you still have to pay that back right away.
Exactly. So unless you've got a great signing bonus that lets you pay off the loan to the old 401k and then you can roll it, but you cannot roll it with the loan intact.
All right. So, but overall with 401ks then, if you are just to continue to keep contributing, resist the temptation, I mean, it's what we're going to need when it comes to retirement more than anything else, right? What, 20, 30 years, it will be the principal vehicle for our retirement.
Well, that or Social Security, but you cannot walk into HR and say, excuse me, you've been taking out, you know, what is it, $6,000-$7,000 a year for my Social Security for all these years. I'd like to, I'd like to borrow some back from Social Security.
Right.
Now, you can't do that, and you can't say, you know, I'm in real trouble. I really need money. There's a serious problem. We're not talking about go shopping. I just can't afford to pay FICA, so stop taking it out of my paycheck for a few months. No, you cannot do that. And there's a much better chance that you'll see something of greater value for your retirement out of your own 401k. So it was just a point made. Don't shortchange yourself. It's tempting. The market's really relatively near highs. Your account has grown. There's a sense like, oh, well, I'm borrowing it for myself. It's a low interest rate. And I just wanted to send out a warning flag. That's not the easy money.
You can read all the details at terrysavage.com. Terry, I'm going to put you on hold for a sec. We're going to take a break. I want to talk jobs when we come back, okay?
All right.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. It's 1222. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. I hope that producer Yun Tai is not playing this for the benefit of Sports Authority, which announced today that it is filing for bankruptcy. Terry Savage is on the phone line. Terry, welcome back to the program.
Oh, I'm sorry. I went out to shop for bargains at Sports Authority.
Do you think there will be bargains? Look, I hate the whole...
Yeah, I think across the country, because they have to do that in a few in the markets where they're closing stores.
Here's the thing. It's not their fault, but I don't think. But those stores can be so expensive, and I think it's only because of the labels that they put on the shorts and the shirts and things like that. But, I mean, it's hard to shop there sometimes.
This is a competitive world. You can go online and check prices everywhere. And while there will always be people willing to pay a premium, such a cute thing on the internet, why will people pay $140 for a plain white T-shirt? I think it was Kanye West's name on it, you know. For the most part, especially families with children, I mean, there comes an end to status symbols and a beginning to spending wisely, and that it creates a competition. And retail is a tough business as it is in the malls, given what's going on online.
It is funny how we've turned upside down, where the items of clothing that should be the cheapest, your gym clothes, become the most expensive because of the branding, you know, and the Nike swoosh or the Under Armour or any of that. It's kind of crazy. All right, so the ADP came out with its jobs report today. The federal government... Yeah, federal government will have its on Friday for February, but the numbers were big, 214,000 private sector jobs created, which was a good deal, more than expected. You're calling it amazing.
Yeah, it was a very good deal, more than expected. There were some analysts who had estimates of numbers as low as maybe 165,000, and the top estimates were around 205. So to get 214,000, I mean, it may not seem like a lot in an economy the size of ours, but the smart money, the economists who look at that stuff, we're not expecting anything like this. Of course, it plays into a lot of questions. It plays into political issues of what are the wages for these jobs, what kind of jobs are they. You can be sure that both political sides will be crunching these numbers out. And it also plays into how strong the economy is and what the Fed might do next time around about raising rates. You know, we've had a lot of cross currents, some strong economic news, some mixed economic news. But 2 weeks ago, maybe, we were hearing the words recession. And we're not hearing that now, and with good reason, because we've had, you know, the Chicago purchasing managers' numbers. Nothing is terrific, but nothing is falling off a cliff for sure. Jobs are the key.
I would say the number that jumps out at Donald Trump are the manufacturing jobs. They actually lost 9,000 jobs last month, which is the second biggest drop in 5 years. And we've talked about manufacturing a few times on the show in the past few weeks. That is an area where we're slipping.
Well, there's a lot under the headline numbers. Yes, we're losing manufacturing jobs. They may not even, some of them, this is going to get tricky here. You know, we live in a global economy, and to the extent that we replace older manufacturing jobs with more technology jobs, we may not have the people trained to do the jobs that require more technology and less manual labor, as in manufacturing. But in a certain way, we can raise our whole economy. But it gets so tricky because the word manufacturing jobs has become a buzzword. Well, we do have empty old factories. And, you know, Oreo cookies are going to be made in Mexico, kind of a scary thought. But the fact is that if we can replace those with the kinds of high-tech jobs that are not only better paid, but raise our standard of living overall, it may not be as horrible a trade-off as the buzzword manufacturing
job. So what you're saying is that it's a little bit like being depressed about the closed blacksmith shops during the days of the auto industry.
Warren Buffett put it best. What if we had required 11 million people to still be stay on the farms and produce farming, produce food for all of us? Farming improved in the last 100 years, and it was a natural evolution that there are fewer people employed in farming, and yet we feed probably 50 times more people with the amount of labor we have in farming. So economies change, times change, and I hate to see the kinds of expressions that we're going to retaliate on trade because they took our jobs. They took jobs that people are willing to do for a lot less money. Let's create jobs that people are willing to do that raise our standard of living and pay more. And you can't do that by building a trade wall around America. Forget the immigration wall, but a trade wall. That doesn't work.
Terry Savage, thank you for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Good to talk with you, Steve.
You're listening to The Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you, Kim. Steve Bertrand here on the Wintrust Business Lunch. It's a Wednesday afternoon, and this is the time typically on a Wednesday, not always, but Scott Kleinberg stopped by from the Chicago Tribune. Scott writes about social media. Welcome to the program.
Thank you, Steve.
So I like to talk about the innovation and the new developments, but Sometimes it's nice just to have fun. And
yes,
a lot of people are having fun with Chris Christie. He spoke last night. First of all, he shocked people. I don't quite get the game yet why he introduced or endorsed Donald Trump. He introduced him last night, and then Trump, someone just texted, said, it looks like Donald Trump pointed to the spot where Christie was to stand. He stood over his right shoulder for the speech, and then, you know, he was in an impossible situation where you have to stand over a guy's shoulder who's speaking for 30 minutes, but people are having a lot of fun with his different facial expressions.
They're having a lot of fun because there's this one particular photo where he's staring off, like, into the close distance, like, at Trump, and some people are saying that he's screaming without saying a word, kind of like the whole, what have I done type of thing. And you know what? When you think about it in that context, it's really accurate.
But it's just one of those things that's taken off on the internet today.
Oh,
right?
My gosh. If you just do like a Twitter search for Chris Christie hostage, it's unbelievable.
Well, he's not a hostage. He walked into the cell himself.
Yes, he did.
He's just not holding the key anymore, probably. But then one other one, and I mentioned this with Bill and Wendy, Scott Walker, and it's hard to know, right? Because you want to use social media.
Yes.
It's important to do so. We talk about that.
Yes.
And so Walker apparently had this idea yesterday. He was about to sign 58 pills in Wisconsin, the governor of Wisconsin. So he takes a picture of his hand with his phone and then tweets it out and says, what, this is my hand before I
signing 58 bills.
Yep. And boom, man, the people have been picking on him ever since.
Yes. And people are still tweeting photos of their hands with various things that they're doing. And
some of them repeatable.
And some of them are awesome. This one person just has a regular photo of her hand and says, photo of my hand as I read people's tweets about their hands. And I mean, you know, it's so silly, but it's so funny at the same time.
So I wonder, does that serve him well or not so well? You would think not well, but a lot of traffic.
You would think not well, but you know what? The fact that people kept it kind of nice and they didn't go into really dark places tells me that he'll come out of that okay.
There's a picture of Scott Walker's hand as he signs the bill. All right. Yep. Bernie Sanders would like to sign some bills as president, and he's got a steep climb ahead of him, but he's doing all right on Snapchat.
He's Reddit.
Reddit, that's right.
Yes. And it's interesting that Reddit is made up of this whole giant place, and then there are subreddits which are devoted to specific topics. So each presidential candidate has its own subreddit. And if you look at, if that was to be some kind of indicator of who was going to win, it turns out that Sanders is far in the lead in terms of number of people who joined his subreddit, followed next by Trump.
And when you can, I'm not a Reddit guy. I just have not, gotten into it.
Yeah.
But when you get to that subreddit, then I'm assuming that is broken down by conversation as well.
Yes. Think of it as a folder on top of inside something.
Right.
So,
okay.
So you have all the topics inside, but you have a certain number of people who follow that particular subreddit as like a like or a, you know, just a number of people.
So I was going to say that Reddit tends to be popular with younger people, which would explain why Sanders.
That's absolutely right. And the difference, exactly. And the difference between, like, it's 193,000 subscribers for Bernie Sanders to 34,000 for Donald Trump. Now, the Donald Trump number is growing. So that will be very telling because you're right. Reddit does skew younger. So all of a sudden, if Donald Trump catches up, that's telling. It's not scientific in any way. It's just fun to kind of watch how the numbers fluctuate.
All right. There's that. So I said Snapchat earlier because so much of what's going on right now when it comes to Facebook or Twitter seems to be spurred or sparked by the success of Snapchat.
Yeah, it has a lot to do with it. Yes. It all comes down to video.
And so Snapchat, tell me the number, 8 billion videos on its app every day. Is that the number?
8 billion video
a
day.
So are more people watching videos on Snapchat than on Facebook?
It's actually even right now. And the number that Snapchat released is as of Monday. And normally when you look for numbers from Snapchat, they go back many, many months. They're not usually updated. And the CEO was speaking at a conference and he said, we're up to 8 billion video views a day. And Facebook is also up to 8 billion video views a day.
Okay. But it seems to me there are a lot more Facebook users than there are Snapchat users.
Yes, absolutely. But Snapchat is so much video and it's so young, it's so skewing young that people watch more video on Snapchat to get them up to that point.
All right, so what then does Facebook do if they can see that there's this treasure trove to take advantage of it?
I think what Facebook is doing is the smart thing. They've released live video, which is their version of Periscope that we've talked about before, you know, just like live video chatting. And it's they're expanding it in such a way where I think they want people to use it just like they use Snapchat. The people who use Facebook usually don't use Snapchat. They're not usually a crossover kind of thing.
Right.
And Facebook announced this week that if you use live video, you're likely to appear higher in people's news feeds when you're live.
Because they're cooking that book.
Yes. They are really trying hard to get people to embrace it. If you haven't embraced it before, they're like, well, now we're going to make it so people see your stuff faster.
And they say people are more likely they watch a live video longer.
Yes, rather than go back and watch one that has already been there. And the thing that's so cool about Facebook is, you know, Snapchat, something disappears after a few minutes. On Facebook, if you do a video and you're done, the video still lives in your timeline and you can watch it whenever. But you're right, more people are likely to watch it when they're actually live versus after the fact.
And that's the car crash principle there? Or why do you think that is? I mean, that's a little more unknown?
Yeah, I think it's a little more unknown. And I think people generally are always interested in what someone is doing now. It's easy to say after the fact, I took this video of this and you'd be like, okay, well, that's enough. But if you're just live now and you said, you know, Steve is live now, you want to know what he's saying.
Right. There's something enticing about the fact that no one knows what's going to happen next. If you're watching a recorded video,
yes,
many people know what's coming. But if it's live, no one knows.
Exactly. But Facebook has its work cut out of it, you know, cut out for it to see if people are actually going to change the way they use Facebook the most, which is wishing people happy birthday and all that kind of stuff, and actually going out and doing something live.
Sometimes when these things come up, it's I have what I think is a logical question, but I realize it might sound really dumb to a lot of people.
Oh, I'm sure it's not.
So if you're going to watch a live video,
yep,
you have to tune in for that live video.
Yes.
You have to know it's coming.
You either have to know it's coming or you have to come upon it at some point when you just happen to be on Facebook. But for it to have its full impact, yes, you have to know it's coming.
Which tells me that these numbers, the live video, the impact really are only from big players, from celebrities or events or things like that.
Oh, there's no doubt in my mind that that has more to do with it.
I mean, if I put up if we start doing a live video right now, we should. But
that would be fun.
But it would only be the people who happened upon it who would see it. So there might be six people.
There may be six people. But if we were to say ahead of time, you know, that we're going to be doing this on Wednesdays and Fridays or for a week or whatever, I think you'd have more people watching it. Then again, I think you're always going to get more people watching live video if you're somewhere fun. Someone on a beach in Hawaii is always going to get thousands of views versus something else.
All right, Twitter also rolling out support for videos and direct messages. It's all about video now, isn't it?
It really is all about video. And I'm trying to think of a real point where I would ever put a video in a private message,
right?
But just the fact that they are allowing that type of thing shows exactly what you're saying. They're thinking about video and they're thinking about ways that, you know, whether it's two people interacting in a private message or a person and a company interacting, you know, this technically means, and it absolutely means, that if you have a problem at a restaurant, you could take a video at the restaurant, go back and send a private message to the restaurant and let them know about it. You could also do that publicly, which is not the way I would recommend doing it, but
or you could go on Facebook and do it live and see what kind of splash you make.
Yes, and I bet you that would give a big splash.
Scott Kleinberg writes about social media for the Chicago Tribune. You can follow him. What's your Twitter? I know I had
at Scott Kleinberg.
It's just at Scott Kleinberg. Is there an underscore there or no?
Nope.
At Scott Kleinberg. All right, thanks for coming by.
Thank you, Steve.
You're listening to The Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. It's 12:51. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, and I'm your host, Steve Bertrand. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you'll follow me on Twitter at Steve Bertrand, or on Facebook at Steve Bertrand, or Steve Bertrand on Books, or Steve Bertrand Travel as well. You've been hearing about the trip we've got going to Prague and Vienna this summer, partnering with WGN, bringing a lot of listeners. So there's more information there if you're interested in that. All right, so I'm always reading about different business stories, features, and things. And one of my favorite spots is MarketWatch.com. And I came upon an article written by Maria LaMagna about marketing and marketing products by gender. And so I thought we'd talk to Maria a little bit about that. Maria, welcome to the program.
Thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
There's a quote you have from a Duke professor, and she's citing sort of common wisdom, that the idea that marketing, when you market a product to everyone, you're really marketing to no one. If you're so bland that you're trying to bring everyone in, probably no one will react to the message. Okay, I get that. But you are writing about I guess, this idea of taking non-traditionally male products and marketing them to men, right?
Exactly.
Is that what we're talking about? So cleaning supplies and laundry detergent and things like that, marketing to them to men. Is that a new trend? Is that growing?
Yeah, well, so my colleagues at the Wall Street Journal wrote a story about looking specifically at laundry, which apparently is a real trend that more men are doing their laundry than in the past. So that kind of led to laundry detergent companies starting to market directly to them. And I looked, you know, just beyond that into other products that have tried the same thing. One thing that I thought was interesting is a lot of examples came to my mind that didn't go so well. So it was interesting to dig into that more and see some examples of times when marketing just more to men or just more to women actually were successful in the past.
Hang on, Maria. I'm going to go light my Yankee candle and then I'll come back to our conversation. I want to get to that in a minute. But, you know, the laundry detergent makes a little sense. I was a single guy for a long time living on my own. And, you know, laundry soap sort of smells, I don't know. Now, it doesn't smell feminine, but there's not a spice smell to it.
Right.
So, I mean, I guess I can sort of see that. I'm not sure I understand. Whirlpool has come out with a clothes washer that allows you to not separate your colors from your whites, I guess. And the idea is,
I guess, yeah, that was based on some research that men tend not to do that.
I think that's true.
Yeah. So it's interesting the way data that they're collecting on the way men do their laundry is leading to some actually new products.
All right, let's do the Yankee Candle thing, because I was shocked to hear that Yankee Candle actually came out with a line of candles, especially for men, with scents like Camouflage, On Tap, Mantown, I'm not sure about that, or Riding Mower.
What, yep.
How did they do with those?
So they did that in 2012, and it did not continue. So
what
I guess
Mantown, you know, smell like, Maria? Do you have any idea?
I don't know. I think the label looked sort of like a traditional man cave kind of photo, you know, like an armchair in front of a TV. So I don't know exactly what the scent was.
It's not a smell I want to buy.
Yeah, exactly. I know. I don't really know what Camouflage would smell like either. But yeah, I guess the idea was just, candles seem too feminine, so let's come out with specifically candles marketed to men. But yeah, as I said, they didn't end up continuing the line. So I guess, you know, maybe that's some indication of how successful it was, but it was relatively short-lived.
Yeah, Camouflage is a candle where you can smell the scent, but you don't know where it is.
Yeah, there you go.
There was a yogurt product you wrote about that came in a black container with a steer's head on it.
Yeah, so that's actually one of the more successful versions of this idea of marketing a product to men. Cam Newton, the Carolina Panthers quarterback, is now endorsing Oikos Triple Zero yogurt made by Danone, which is in a more masculine-looking package. And then there's a whole separate company called Powerful Yogurt that is solely based on this idea of marketing yogurt to men. That's like their whole business model. And they've been really successful. They saw sales growth of 120% from 2014 to 2015. So, you know, they've expanded their line. So it does seem like something that men are latching onto.
I see. I think it makes a little, I can see that yogurt maybe isn't considered manly in some circles. So
yeah. They
would market it that way. It seems like there's a risk here when a company goes down this road, because a lot of people are pretty sensitive about gender and they could offend as well.
Exactly. And especially in this age when consumers can react in real time on social media to different products and marketing campaigns, there have definitely been some examples of times when it's not gone well. One of the more famous examples is Ellen DeGeneres several years ago was asked to represent Bic pens for her, which was basically, you know, a pink and purple version of, you know, basically the exact same pen that Bic was selling anyway.
All right, Maria, look around. Are you near a pen right now?
I am.
Is it pink or is it purple?
No, it's not. It's silver, actually.
Oh, but
it's gender neutral.
But it's got flowers on it, doesn't it, Maria?
No, it doesn't. Yeah, but that was kind of the point she was making, too. Like, why do women need their own pen? So that was a concept I was talking to my sources for about this story, you know, and basically what they said is, if you're going to market something to just men or just women, you have to actually raise the bar, not lower the bar for the product, and add some kind of feature that is genuinely helpful to either one of the genders, instead of, taking that sort of condescending, I guess, approach to trying to guess what a certain gender wants.
Right. When it comes with certain assumptions, it's just not going to work. But I guess when it works best is when you don't even know it's happening. And you write about Coke Zero. It never occurred to me that Coke Zero was Diet Coke for men. But
me
I guess that's what they had in mind.
Yeah, I know. I never really realized that either. But apparently, you know, the word diet, just, I guess, traditionally being more associated with women, the company went a different direction and just went with this more stark packaging and got rid of the word diet. And, yeah, you know, it is a different product, but more importantly, the marketing was very different.
It's a very different package. That's right. All right, Maria LaMagna from MarketWatch.com. I want you to go. I want you to write your next story on a pink iPad. And we'll look forward to reading it. Thanks very much for joining us today.